Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
One day, just by chance, at a cab driver's dance, a wonderful girlie I found. A bootlegger's daughter, who always drank water, unless there was liquor around.
All right, drinking in the 20s, that was great, right? Well, maybe not. Despite what you may think, you could say Prohibition was the worst era for cocktails in the history of the United States, what with the bathtub gin, the watered-down rye, and the sickly sweet mixers used to mask the taste of bad liquor.
I love Rotgut. What are you talking about?
But now, Speakeasy is making a comeback. The only difference is this time it's legal. Joining me now is New York Times writer William Grimes, who writes about this trend in today's New York Times. Good morning.
Good morning.
So thanks for coming in, and what is going on here?
I asked myself many times. I mean, I heard liquor was legal these days, but...
Oh, goody!
So what have you been finding out there?
Well, there's a lot of bars, not just in New York, but many in New York, but all over the country, that are putting on the guise of being illegal while serving legal drinks. They're sort of tapping into this feeling of illicit booze from the 1920s and serving it in 2009. It's a strange kind of nostalgia or reaching back to pick up a feeling about drinking and cocktails that people find exciting and trying to refabricate it for the 21st century.
So is there some sort of kind of back to the future thing here? Or maybe people don't want to go back to the previous part of this decade, so they're going back to the roaring 20s before the last great crash? Is there some big sociological analysis here?
I don't know how big the analysis is. My feeling is that we live in a culture where it's impossible to have a subculture because everything becomes instantly known and everything pretty much is allowed. I mean, you can't deal drugs. You're not supposed to do that, but just short of that and killing somebody. We live in an incredibly open society, and it's hard to find things that feel a little bit wrong.
Those are the only rules, in your view, don't kill anyone and don't deal drugs.
After that, it's very hard for me to figure out something you're not supposed to be doing. So I think people like the idea of doing something that's
dangerous, slightly
wrong, a little bit dangerous, a walk on the dark side. And the visuals and the music of the 20s are very strong. People love that. In fact, everything about the 20s, except the drinks, was just great.
In fact, we talked to a patron of a speakeasy last night and in the trendy East Village in Manhattan, Jennifer. This is what she had to say about why she was going to one of these speakeasies.
Secrecy was probably appealing. I'd heard that it's difficult to get into, and we actually tried to get reservations a good month or two ago, and we failed. And because we weren't able to get in, it immediately seemed like a place that we absolutely had to do our best to get into. Huh.
So is that the business model here? Like, oh, because it's exclusive, people are going to want to go, and it's sort of the new recession era way to get people to go out and drink?
Don't let them in and they will come.
Right. Oh, that's great. That's a good thing.
That's an old formula.
It seems also like that woman there is trying to get around the annoying bouncer at the clubs, you know, who like picks people out of a line and you have to stand in that humiliating kind of pecking order thing to get into an exclusive club. This is a much more civilized way of making the entree.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, there's a certain amount of mumbo-jumbo with passwords and secret doors and all that sort of thing. But when you get right down to it, a lot of these places, it's not that hard to get into. But they're very discreet about either no signs out front or such minimal signage that you walk up and down the block, as I did with this place called Rye in Williamsburg. It really took me quite a while to figure out, yeah, this is the place. And I walked
in. So it's not just a drink. It's an adventure.
Yeah, you go out on a little safari, a little drinking safari, and if you're lucky, you find a place and a little bit more luck, and you get in the front door, and then you get a great cocktail.
It's not just a drink, it's an adventure. Are you writing ad copy this one? That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. Now I'm going to have my coffee and milk cocktail, but this article is in the food section of today's Times, let's not forget. So how are the drinks compared to the 1920s?
About 1,000 times better. If you think about it, the raw drinks, like any other kind of culinary artifact, start with raw materials. And if you have great raw materials, you have a good chance of getting a good outcome. Well, in the 20s, the raw materials were just awful, and sometimes they were lethal. Today,
lots of people died.
Lots of people died. I think I mentioned a statistic for 1928, I think it was, but there were about 750 people died in New York. There was a body count in the holiday season, you know, as we got into Christmas, of something like 50 people who were, you know, just dropped dead after drinking cocktails. You don't have to worry about that when you go to these places. And in fact, you're getting, you know, this trend coincides with another trend that has nothing to do with the 20s, which is these, what you might call the artisanal cocktail. You have these people who are very conscious of cocktail history and are excited about making best possible cocktails with great ingredients, some of the ingredients they make themselves. And this isn't like bathtub gin, but sort of their own homemade bitters-infused cocktail.
Did you actually have to try bathtub gin to do this story?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
but somebody's,
I'm glad to hear that.
There's a bar out in Cleveland called Speakeasy where they're going to make their own gin.
Any food, or is it just about drinking?
Some of these are food as well as drink. And Rye, which I mentioned in Williamsburg, had a really good kitchen, as a matter of fact. I was pleasantly surprised about that. But behind the bar, they tend to have little cocktail menus, and the cocktails themselves are just little gems, little works of art. And that trend has been going on for about, maybe 10 or 15 years in New York, and it gathers steam. I thought it was a fad that was just going to disappear, but no, it's gathered strength. And a lot of these bars come out of that sensibility. There's the mother bar is this Milk and Honey, which was like the Greta Garbo of New York bars. The idea was, if you knew about it, the only person who was supposed to walk in there was somebody who on the secret somehow knew about this place, and they didn't want too many people to know about it.
All right. Exclusivity rules the day. Thanks so much, New York Times writer William Grimes. You can read about the new trend in speakeasies in today's issues of the New York Times.